Well, this weekend has gone too quickly, and hate to be getting ready to leave so soon. I've very, very, very much enjoyed my time here. I've been treated like family just as soon as I got here. Already feel very, very comfortable with all of you, which is probably a good time to leave before I do something embarrassing. But yeah, and so I'm also very excited, the opportunity I have now to share with you at least some information about the work in New York. And it just ends up being a lot like show and tell. And I don't know about you, but I always enjoyed show and tell. I'm very excited to share with you the work that's going on up there and let you help you guys understand what you're investing into. You know, we can all live in New York, and but the investment you guys are making financially to support me, as well as some other evangelists in different places, just helps us to be there and to do the work. And hopefully I can help you be encouraged by what you guys' investment is actually accomplishing. So here's a view from the Bronx, looking over towards the George Washington Bridge. Just across that would be New Jersey. And the area in which I would work would be Northern Manhattan and the Bronx, and so that's kind of what my neighborhood's looking like. This is all of New York. These are all the five boroughs. You've got Manhattan, which is, that's the New York that everybody knows about. Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn, and Staten Island, which Staten Island is basically New Jersey. We don't really count that one very often. Of course, as you know, you know, New York has a very high population, lots of people there. It's 8.5 million now. When I moved there in 2005, it was 8.2 million. So it's growing. You know, cities in this country are getting bigger and bigger because people are moving towards the cities instead of moving away from them. And this chart here can help you see comparison of population density. These are by county. So that crazy high bar over there is the county of Manhattan, basically, where you've got a higher population density there than anywhere else. And to give you some reference, Manhattan, how many people does Manhattan have? I had it somewhere, I didn't write it down. You've got 8 million, you know, Manhattan might be 3-4 million, I think. It's 13 miles long and about 2 miles wide. So that's kind of the population density going on in Manhattan. So pretty dense. Obviously, New York is very, very diverse. There's more white people there than other ethnicities, but you know, white people make up less than half of New York. Lots of African American, lots and lots of Hispanic, and then lots of everybody else as well. So a very diverse area. And you know, people say, you know, Jesus says in Matthew 28 to go make disciples of all nations. Well, the easiest place to do that would be New York, because in a couple of blocks you can get a good bit of nations right there. Let's see. So this is New York that most of us are familiar with. That's kind of famous New York. This would be Midtown Manhattan. That's lots of the movies and Avengers and stuff like that. But then there is my New York City, and this is really what New York is, you know. This would be a view from the Bronx, and you can see just a vast sea of apartment buildings. That's what New York is. It's not skyscrapers as much as it is just lots and lots and lots and lots of people. That's what a city is. It's people. And the majority of New York isn't skyscrapers. The majority of New York would be 4 to 8 story apartment buildings. And that's what my New York looks like. You can see Midtown there in a hazy distance. From my window, actually, I can see downtown. I can see the Empire State Building and all those things. My view looks a lot like that, in fact. And so, yeah, so you can see that's about how far we are from Midtown. So it's not that far away. And also, this is just kind of what a typical Upper Manhattan or a Bronx street would look like. You got buses, apartment buildings, people hanging out, doing their things. It's usually sunnier than that, so it's a gray sky. But so the Bronx population is 1,455,000, and so the population density in the Bronx is 34, basically 35,000 people per square mile. I think Bronx is the second most dense borough to in comparison to Manhattan. The Bronx is primarily African American and Hispanic. The Hispanic population would be Dominican, Puerto Rican, and Mexican, but also a little bit of everything else. You can find all different kinds of ethnicities and nationalities in Upper Manhattan in the Bronx. Oh, that's population density. So you see the red is the most dense. So Manhattan's very, very dense. But look at the Bronx, in the Bronx just above Manhattan. That's a very, very dense area as well. And that's really where I've been working primarily the last couple of years. Here's a map of northern Manhattan and the Bronx with some key locations. Is there a laser pointer here? No, that's fine. I'll just finger point then. I can't reach that high. So how am I going to do this? Well, it doesn't matter. So that'd be the northern tip of Manhattan, as well as the Bronx. To give you an idea of how big that is, this subway station right here, the very, very bottom, is 96th Street. And the highest station there is 215th Street in Manhattan. 20 blocks is a mile. So what's the math between basically 100th Street to 215th Street? You can do the math because I can't. About how many miles that is. So it's not very, very big, but it's just crammed full of people. That very, very southern dot you see there, that would be where my parents live and where their congregation is. They work at an all-English congregation. If you go just above that, you see the second dot. That would be where I live and where the church is located. I was lucky enough to have the church move and locate 2 blocks from where I live, so that's convenient for me. The dot to the right of that is where some other members live. Some of you guys might know Hannah, Roy, or Jen Gorman. They live just down the block. So there's a decent amount of our members right there in that area. If you keep going north, that third dot, we've got some members who live there. Just above that in Manhattan is, that's where the Spanish congregation is. I used to work with that congregation. If you go just above that into the Bronx, we have members living there. And the other dots, I'll just show you where we have clusters of other members. So we're really spread out through this area. If I wanted to go from my parents' neighborhood, that bottom dot right here, all the way to Roger, another preacher's apartment, which is that far right dot, that would take about 45 minutes to an hour by train. And again, what's that like? It might be 6-7 miles, but just takes longer to get places up there. So that's kind of some key locations. As far as lifestyle, you know, obviously in New York, we live in apartments. This is a Bible study I had in my apartment, and that's a nice group of people. It was a good class. We did not all gather together to take a photo. We were all just sitting that close because my apartment is 300 square feet. You know, New York, there's no space for anything because there's just too many people, so everything's crammed in. So I have my small little studio apartment that I absolutely love. And one day I want to figure out, well, how small is this thing? So I took a tape measure. I did like that, and I did the math, and I figured out it's 300 square feet. It's not too big, but, you know, I love it there. Obviously, lots of public transportation. I mean, the majority of the people of residents in New York would take trains or buses, and really, you can get anywhere in the city by train or bus. And a lot of times it's more convenient. There's a lot of places I would not drive to. I would rather take the train because taking the train there would be easier than driving. You won't have to go through traffic. You won't have to look for parking. Just hop on a train and go. But obviously some other places are easier to get there by car. And incidentally, if you get the monthly unlimited swipe, it's about $116. So if you're living and working in Manhattan, all your transportation, you can get by with about $116 a month. So that's one of the things in New York that would be cheaper than it would be here. Compensates for the expensive rent. Let's see what else. Just some other living things. If you're going to go grocery shopping, you walk down your stairs or go down the elevator, you walk a couple of blocks, you do your grocery shopping, and you carry all your groceries back home. So you're going to be doing more frequent trips to the grocery store, picking up things and installations rather than doing it all at once and putting it in your car and driving that home to your nice little driveway. So, or laundry, you know, there might be a washer and dryer in your basement that you can pay to use, or you'll take your laundry down the block to a laundromat. Just some things like that. And so there are some inconveniences, you know, living there, especially if we're accustomed to living here. But then also lifestyle is cool because I know, I don't know, like at least half the people in my apartment building. You know, every time I'm coming in and out, you know, I see my neighbors and I talk to them and I pet their dogs and they pet my dog and I talk about the kids. When I'm walking down the block or going to church, I know all kinds of people on the block. You know, I live just across from a playground, a park. Kids are always playing and acting crazy and stuff. You know, just cool stuff. And so it's really just pros and cons. You know, things that you get in New York that you can't get anywhere else, and things that you don't have in New York that are much easier other places. But also, really quickly about the Northeast in general. The Christian community in the Northeast is a little bit different. There's obviously less Christians up there. We're more spread out. But it is currently a very exciting and growing community. People who are Christians in the Northeast are usually very deliberate about their Christianity. It's not easy to be a casual Christian in an environment that's not so conducive to our Christian faith. So if you're a Christian in the Northeast, it's usually on purpose. And we tend to find very enthusiastic and zealous and committed Christians. But also there are some people who make sacrifices to move away from homes or move away from family because they want to be a part of the churches and the growing Christian community in the Northeast area. And that's just very encouraging. And so I have brethren in Philly, brethren in Boston, brethren in Albany, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and all of that. And we don't get to see each other on a daily basis, of course. But when there are camps or when there are gospel meetings and things, there's a strong community of people that deliberately get together and spend time together. And some of the best people I've ever known are up in the Northeast. And I just have, it's just a really, really, really good community. And I'm very grateful to be able to be a part of it. Also, this might surprise you. This northwestern tip of Georgia, I think, is prettier than, this doesn't surprise you, but the northwestern tip of Georgia is prettier than a lot of Georgia, right? It's very good rolling hills and some mountains. It's very good. It's just pretty, right? Well, the Northeast is actually a very, very beautiful place as well. And we're familiar with New Jersey, and New Jersey is often affectionately referred to as the armpit of New York because it's all the grossness that you get from New York kind of spilling over to it. But East Jersey, not the nicest place to be. But you just drive a little bit beyond that, and you'll find some beautiful countryside in New Jersey. You go upstate. I could drive 30 minutes, and I'm in farm country in upstate New York. Pennsylvania's gorgeous. Really, the Northeast is a very, very rural area as well. So some of that would actually be pretty familiar to you guys as well. Here's a perk. This is a picture I took from the roof of my building. So this is a sunset, so you can see the sun setting over Jersey there. From my rooftop, I can see the George Washington Bridge. I can see Yankee Stadium. I can see the Met Stadium. I can see Midtown. All kinds of cool stuff. Grant's Tomb. I know you guys probably don't care about Grant's Tomb, but I can see that. It's just a cool place to be. Really quickly about my history. This is the first summer I had moved to New York. I just went to the summer camp. It's an FC summer camp that Gardner Hall runs. And I was quickly introduced into Northeastern culture. So you got a bunch of Dominicans, and there's a Salvadorian girl, and a Mexican girl, and a good old-fashioned white kid, and then Chelsea. and I was just kind of thrown into this, and like, who are these people? I didn't even know half of their name, and then they started washing my hair. I don't really know how it happened. But that was cool, and all these kids in different cultures, and pretty soon after that, Gardner invited me to start teaching the young people at a Spanish church uptown. And I didn't have anything to do. I didn't have any friends, and, you know, church is good. So I said, okay, fine. So I decided to do that. Well, I went up there, and that girl right there in the middle, you know, pointing at me, she actually ended up, she was at that church. I'm like, oh, you know, I met her at camp, and she was fun and cool. So I was teaching her and some other kids in that Bible class up there. And oh, that's not the right picture. Well, I lost a picture, but... And pretty soon, after a couple of years of that, we had a group of like 20, 30 kids in this Spanish church. They all spoke English, of course. And we would go to Queens and work with young people there. We would go to Brooklyn and work with young people there. We'd go to New Jersey. So there's just a really, really big network of just kids who didn't have Christian parents. Usually they would go with their grandma or their aunt or their single mom or what have you. But they really were interested in church. They really liked Bible study. So we started working with them, and a lot of them became baptized believers. One of those guys moved to Atlanta to work with Embry Hills. He's a preacher there. He got married there. Another girl, this crazy, you know, really just ghetto Puerto Rican girl from Brooklyn, completely changed, escaped a lot of the troubles of her family. She married a good guy from New Jersey. I actually was given the honor. I brag about this. You shouldn't brag, but I brag about this. I was actually asked, she asked me to walk her down the aisle, which is probably one of the cooler things I ever did in my life. You know, and so we just got to see a lot of really cool things happen and a lot of transformation. So I really worked with the Spanish church and with the young people for the first years that I was working as a Bible teacher. But about 4 or 5 years ago, we decided it would be helpful to do bilingual work. The community in Upper Manhattan and the Bronx is bilingual. Even Hispanic families would be bilingual. The parents would speak exclusively Spanish, and a lot of times the kids would speak almost exclusively English. You wonder how that works, but it does. And so the kids would want to study the Bible in English, but the parents were only really comfortable and familiar with Spanish. And so we thought it would make sense to be able to have both languages provided in a single congregation. Well, that congregation up in Sherman Avenue, they wanted to stay just Spanish. So we decided to start a new bilingual work. And that's what this is. About 4 or 5 years ago, we started the bilingual church. It's the West Harlem Church, is what we call it. And we began meeting here about 4 or 5 years ago, and I've been a part of that ever since. This is our location. This is a big blessing, actually. It's... actually, an impossibility for us to have our own location. We would have to rent, you know, once a week or twice a week from some other big building, and there would be a lot of restrictions there and complications there. But we actually were blessed with this location that we rent 24/7. It's our location. One of our members, her husband is the treasurer of these co-ops. This is actually an apartment building. And this used to be a bodega, and a bodega is just a convenience store. You know, they sell chips and sandwiches and things like that. And it had been shut down for drug trafficking, which is not good. But the good news is, well, then we got it, right? So we moved in at a very cheap, very, very, very cheap price because I think they wanted some better tenants. So we rent this, and then we also 24/7, and then there's another basement space just across the from the wall there, which we rent twice a week. And we rent that monthly for $1,500, which that's cheaper than most apartments in New York. And so that's just a gift from God. I mean, that should never have happened, but it did. And so that's super and extremely useful and helpful for us to have our own location, especially when space is such an issue. It's so hard to find in New York. So some things about our work. Here's a group of our members there for Sunday. We were pretty packed that day. As we said before, we are a bilingual church. And I would say that confidently that we are 50-50 bilingual. We're not English and also providing Spanish. It's just absolutely bilingual. Everything is translated. And it's, you know, it's difficult. But because it's so necessary, it's not very cumbersome. We know how much we need bilingual. We know how valuable it is to be bilingual. So we just do it, and it's not really that big of a problem. It's also helpful knowing we can really reach out to anybody in the community. I would say 90% of the people in our communities are speaking English or Spanish. So we can invite just about anybody to be a part of it. And so how does being bilingual work? Well, worship, we translate everything. When someone gets up to pray, they say a sentence, it's translated, say another sentence, it's translated. When we do the scripture reading, we read a verse, it's translated. When we do announcements, say an announcement, it's translated. You know, we have people who are bilingual who can translate from one language to the other. We have some guys who feel comfortable only translating it from Spanish to English or vice versa. So the guy gets up there, he speaks whatever language he's most comfortable with. Or he realizes the translator is only comfortable doing from Spanish to English, so I'll go ahead and speak Spanish, and he'll do it, so forth. But fortunately, we have a lot of good bilingual speakers. We have a lot of good translators. The challenging part is translating songs. So what do we do for that? Well, we've made songbooks, which I should have put some pictures. We make songbooks where we have an English and a Spanish version of every song that we have. The lyrics sometimes are mostly the same. It'll be like the same melody, and the lyrics would be sometimes very much the same or just generally the same. But sometimes we'll sing an English song, and the next one will be a Spanish song. Sometimes we'll do two verses in English and then two verses in Spanish. Or we'll do one verse English, one verse Spanish, and whatever. Whatever decision we make, it's up to the song leader. But we try to make sure that we provide an equal amount of singing in both English and Spanish. One thing that's kind of cool, there's some call and response songs, right? Like, I will call upon the Lord. We've actually made that into a, you know, the call is English and the response is Spanish, so we can sing both languages at once, which that's kind of cool. Classes we will go ahead and split up. We'll have an English adult class and then a Spanish adult class. All the kids' classes would be in English. And so we won't translate those. We'll just have different classes. And so every Sunday and every Wednesday, we have four different classes going on basically. Sunday, there's an English adult and an English Spanish on whatever topics they are on. And then Wednesday, another English adult and English or English adult and Spanish adult on different topics. So we'll have, if you're an English member, you hear one type of class on Sunday and another class on Wednesday. We have a lot of diversity in our church. Of course, we've got people from the United States of America. We've got people from Dominican Republic, people from Puerto Rico, from Ghana, from India, from Panama, and maybe some others that I can't remember at this time. Some other things we do, we have special events four times a year. We always have a guest speaker come four times a year, and we'll make it kind of like this weekend, basically. We do something called small groups, where we have different groups in the church. We'll have the young men or the single men, and then there'll be a young women's class group. There'll be a married couples group. There'll be an older women's group. And every second Sunday of the month, we go with our designated group, and there's a little lesson we go through. But mostly what that group is about is talking and sharing how we're doing on that particular topic. It's really a chance for us to be open and share and try to connect on a deeper level in that way. We have goals and themes we do every year. We have a living goal, which is emphasized on behavior. We have a learning goal, which is emphasizing something that we're going to be studying. So some previous living goals we've had serving or building up the body or disciples, making disciples. Some learning goals, we would go through the entire Bible in a year, or we focus on the Gospels. This year, our living goal is holy to the Lord, and our learning goal is the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, and so those go together very well. Every Sunday, we'll have one lesson on the holiness theme, and all the Wednesday night Bible classes are focused on the Pentateuch as we're going through that, which obviously very much relates to holiness. And then our small groups will also be focused on holiness. Whatever that holiness sermon was that month, the small groups will focus on that. So we're really trying to have a laser point focus and be kind of organized. We've really tried to be very organized about our teaching and very deliberate about our teaching to be as productive and fruitful as we can. If we're going to get together and we're going to do stuff together, we want it to be as useful to people as it possibly can be. And some other things. Here's Roger Polanco translating for Paul Earnhardt, which Paul Earnhardt, you might know him. He's incidentally very hard to translate. He talks very Southern with lots of idioms. And so, when he says some crazy Southern thing, we don't know how to put that in Spanish. This is cool. This is actually some of our members getting together, and they're working on creating our bilingual songbooks. We have to make them ourselves. We type them ourselves. We have to print them. And when you're making 75 songbooks, it's a chore. And so, and there's my dog. That's Nacho right down there. All right, here's some of our diversity. Here's some of the little kids. The little guy on the left. Okay, so the girl on the left and the guy in the striped shirt, they actually live in the building. They're the Supers kids, and the Supers just around the corner in the basement. And so they like for us to babysit. So the church starts, and they send us those little guys, and they cause a ruckus and join the classes. The Giants sweater, that is Roger Polanco's kid. He's one of our evangelists. And on the right, that's Cyrus. That's Caleb Churchill's kid. He's another one of our evangelists. Here's some of our people. Here's some of the kids we have. That's them getting in the elevator of the building. On the right, that is the adult Spanish class, which, tell you what, man, it's hard. It's hard finding Christian guys in New York. Now, this is the adult Spanish class, and you notice there's not really any guys. You know, I'm the teacher. I'm a white dude. There's Roger. Besides that, there's no guys. It's all women. Because in New York, faithful men are just hard to find. I'm actually the third oldest guy in my church. I'm not that old, I'm 32. There's another guy who's about 38, and there's Gardner Hall. We've actually converted two guys in the last couple years who are older than I am, but they're still very much babes in Christ, very weak. And so we don't have strong, faithful men, older men in the church. It's just hard to find men of character in New York City, period. Which is why we need more people in the area to help strengthen us and give us some stability. But I hear all these women, and they're all great and wonderful, and they all cook good. And that's very important. So I was actually teaching Titus in Spanish. That was my first time I got to lead my own class for a quarter in Spanish. I had a lot of fun with that. This is the baptism. And this is just the little alleyway just outside of our basement building. And it's hard to find places to baptize people. I mean, I guess you could go to the Hudson, but they might get some sort of skin disease, or we might get arrested. So we have a portable baptistry, which is it fits in a box about this wide and about this tall. It's a little metal frame that you can unfold, and you put this little tarp thing in it, and you button the tarp thing, and you just fill it with water. It has a little spigot for when you want to drain it, and that's how we baptize people. And it's always the weirdest experience, but it reminds you of the humility that's involved in baptism. You know, it's like the whole Naaman thing when he had to wash into Jordan. It's not a very glamorous process. Baptism isn't very glamorous, is it? You know, it's the biggest, most important thing in the world, but what are we doing? We're dying to our sinful selves, and somehow this weird process just reminds us we're getting baptized, we're getting wet, and we come out wet, and it's just a humbling experience, and so. But that works. That thing was like $900, though, which is crazy. So, but whatever. But what else we got? Okay, apparently I'm not doing my slideshow very well. All right, here it is. So we actually have four evangelists at our congregation, which sounds crazy. I'll explain that in a little bit. We got Gardner Hall, and of course, y'all know Beverly. I heard she's pretty popular in these parts. And so Gardner has been in the Northeast for about 30-plus years. He's been working primarily with the Spanish population. He used to be working with four churches or so. Now he's primarily working with two, one in Fairlawn, New Jersey, and then there's us. And so he doesn't live in New York, but he's with us every Sunday, every Wednesday. His participation is a little bit limited because of his distance from us and also his obligations to other congregations. But he's the gray hair in our church. He's the older guy that we have to look to and lean to for wisdom and for help. He's obviously one of our Spanish teachers. He preaches in Spanish and teaches the Spanish classes, so we need that help, obviously. He runs the Florida College camp in that area, and I would say about a quarter of our, at least a quarter of our membership exists because of that camp. In fact, if that camp didn't exist, and I wouldn't still be in New York, and this church wouldn't be here or anything. So he just laid a foundation of Christian culture and opportunities for years and years and years. And recently, he's really been able to see some fruit and some growth for all that hard work that he's done, because he laid the foundation. Then some younger guys like myself, Caleb and Roger, could show up and build on top of that. So he's just extremely important person there. That's me. Yeah. So this is Roger and his family. So he grew up in the Bronx. He was one of the kids that went to camp, to Gardner's camp, and he was one of the kids who would sit in Gardner's Bible, young people's Bible class at Sherman. Well, the first year I was there, he was a senior in high school. He was a little bit younger than me, and I didn't know him at all. He got baptized that year at camp, just on a whim, and then on another whim, he decided to go to Florida College. So he went as a brand new Christian from the Bronx to Florida College, and he was a hot mess. Brand new Christian, all kinds of, he was pretty crazy, right? But he got, became friends with Caleb Churchill and Emily Hall, or Emily Ferenzi. And they were really, really good influence on him. And he just became very, very, very focused on learning the Bible and very interested in teaching the Bible. And he came back from FC just a brand new, completely changed person. About 4 years into his Christian life, and he knew the Bible better than I did. So he's been working, we've been working together in New York for the last, I guess, 8 years or so. And I mean, I probably respect and depend and trust this guy more than I've done so in any other guy I've ever known. He's a wonderful man. He's an excellent evangelist, excellent teacher. Just really, really grateful to have him there. So he teaches and preaches in Spanish, but he's also fluent in English, of course. Caleb Churchill moved there, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. He's been really helpful to us in making things happen. He's kind of a leader, do kind of guy. I follow and I kind of support and cooperate. But he kind of shows up and says, okay, we need to do this different and that different, and kind of push us in ways we don't want to be pushed until changes happen. And he just gets things done. You know, the small groups is because of him. A lot of the themes is because of him. A lot of our organization is because of him. He's been a really good leader. He's really helped us focus a lot more on equipping the membership. Instability is a big problem in New York. And, you know, if these people would move away, well, then what would happen to the rest of the church? Well, it can't be that way. The church needs to be the strength of the church. And we as evangelists need to stop just giving people, spoon-feeding people, but rather training people to do the work themselves. And he's just been really, really important in doing that process in ways that I would not be able to. I don't have talent to do that. So he's been very useful in those ways. Him and Lindsay actually have plans to start a new congregation in Brooklyn in 2018. They're going to get some help from another couple to start that work. And that's exciting. He's been doing a meetup class in Brooklyn. I don't even think he advertises it. They don't do flyers, but just the meetup class. They have 8 to 10 people and brand new visitors every single Saturday without even trying. You know, and so, you know, Brooklyn's pretty ripe for the gospel at the moment. So he's excited about starting that work. We don't have any plans of bringing in another evangelist after he leaves. We want to really use this as an opportunity for some of our younger men to step up and take more responsibility and grow in his absence, which we've seen happen a lot. You know, when a good leader like Bill, one of our young men who became a very good, strong leader, he went to Atlanta and he left a big hole. And so other guys like Carlos and Kelvin stepped up to fill in that gap. And so we're looking forward to that opportunity. You might wonder why we have 4 evangelists. Sometimes I wonder why we have 4 evangelists with about 60 members. It sounds kind of crazy. A couple things to keep in mind. Remember, New York is 8 million people. Our work is not just that congregation. Our work is really evangelism. And we all, there's an abundance of individual classes that we have with people. Each week, Caleb and Roger are doing meetup classes in the Bronx. I think they have 3 that have attendance from probably collectively about 30, 35 different people attending those 3 meetup groups. And so there's just an abundance of work. And we can share and cooperate with the classes and the preaching at West Harlem, which helps us be much more available to work outside of the church in West Harlem. And We just need more preachers in New York, period. You know, and so, yeah, that's that. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about my work. That's my action pose right there, Ryan. It's me in action. So obviously I work with West Harlem. That takes up a lot of my time. I've been working on my Spanish. When I moved to New York, I didn't know a lick of Spanish. I never really wanted to learn Spanish in any way. But for the last 12 years, I've been, you know, surrounded by Spanish culture and a Spanish community. And so that's given me a foundation to get more familiar with Spanish. I mean, I attended a Spanish church for 6-7 years. Now I'm part of a bilingual church. And so the more that I'm becoming a permanent fixture in New York, the more that I realize I'm not sure when I'll ever leave New York or if I'll ever want to leave New York, I've been, you know, more committed to learning Spanish to be more helpful in the Spanish community. So all the time in New York gave me a good foundation, but I hadn't actually studied any Spanish formally. So I actually did some Skype classes with Hannah Roy. Her Spanish was better than mine. She taught me some grammar and things, and that got me excited and helped me make a decision to spend some time in Guatemala. The last 2 years, I spent the month of October in Guatemala attending a school where I got 25 to 30 hours of private tutoring a week. So 4 weeks of 25 to 30 hours of private tutoring, it's pretty intensive. And I was able to work in the church down there as well. I just, you know, I told some people that I was coming. I didn't know anybody, but I had some connections. And I showed up, and they were great. Like, just like here, welcomed me in, treated me like family. And I was already asked to teach a Bible class the second Monday that I was there. So basically, after my first week being there, they wanted me to teach. I had never even taught a Bible class in Spanish ever before. But they're just eager to throw me in the deep end and get me involved. And so I ended up teaching a lot. I taught, I think, 4 to 5 times that first year. And then when I went back the next year, I taught 2 public classes at least a week. And I did multiple individual classes. Some of the preachers said, well, since you're here, we're going to take a trip to the coast and do some preaching there. And you're going to teach this person, this person, this person for me. So I filled in for them while they were gone. And so that was really cool. And so now my Spanish is at a level where I'm able to use it. I got to make a trip to Honduras where I was able to preach there about 8 to 10 times in Spanish. And now that my Spanish is that level, I came back to New York and I took over the Spanish class for a quarter. I've done a couple of sermons at West Harlem in Spanish just to show the members why I went to Guatemala. I'm being invited to speak at other Spanish churches to fill in preaching there, which is cool. But also my favorite is being able to do individual classes with people in Spanish. I'm at a level now where I can, you know, ask a Spanish-speaking person if they would want to study the Bible with me and feel pretty comfortable doing that. I plan on continuing to make Spanish trips to Spanish-speaking countries. I'm going to Nicaragua, God willing, this September. And I want to make these trips because it helps me to build my Spanish, keeps me motivated to learn Spanish, but also it's going to help me be more familiar with works in different countries so that if I should decide to become absolutely fluent and move somewhere, I would have an idea of where I would like to go. Here's Guatemala on the left. That's me. Actually, yeah, it's me and some of the men of that church there. On the right, that is our trip to Honduras where we took a truck up a mountain. That was cool. And this is a pig in a wheelbarrow. So I saw that in Guatemala. And even the Guatemalans thought that was weird. So I took a picture of that. And I'm showing it to you now. All right. We've also done some street evangelism. You know, obviously the best form of evangelism is inviting your friends and things like that. But we try to just do some cold contact just to reach out to people. So what we started doing is we would print flyers that have information for available Bible classes. And we walk down the block and we'd see someone say, hey, are you interested in studying the Bible? And a lot of people would be like, no, I'm good. And they would just keep walking. That's fine. Some people, though, they would take it and pause a little bit. And then we would try to initiate a conversation with them. And that was really the key. Very, 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 very rarely will someone actually contact you from a flyer. If you hand out 500, 800 flyers, maybe someone will call you back from the flyer. But really what we were trying to do is have an excuse to start a conversation with someone and just ask them if they believe in God, you know, do they know much about the Bible, and just conversate with them about spiritual things and see if we can find a need that we can offer them help. And it's kind of the idea, we realize we probably won't ever see this guy ever again, but if I can talk to him and find out something that he might need to hear and share that with him, even if I never see him ever again, at least I shared that idea with him. But I tell you, we've had converts. You know, one of my dearest brothers is a guy I met on the block. Asked me if he wanted a Bible study, and he looked at me sideways. And about a year and a half later, he was baptized. So we've had several baptisms come from street evangelism. That's this guy right here. This is Daryl. I'll go ahead and tell that story. So he was just outside of a halfway house waiting for lunch. Handed him a flyer, asked if he wanted to study the Bible, and he was very skeptical, and he kind of looked at me sideways and spoke to me a little bit curtly. And I just kept asking questions, and he kind of spoke up some more about his history. He used to be part of the Jehovah's Witness Church and some things like that. And at some point, he said he needed a Bible. I said, oh, okay, I'll get you a Bible. I said, just wait here. So I ran home, came back and gave him a Bible. And when I gave him the Bible, he was much more friendly and asked if I could have his number and give him a call sometime. So he gave me his number. And so I called him, and he picked up, and I said, do you want to meet? He said, sure. So we met up at a McDonald's. And that first time he sat down and he just told me all kinds of stuff about himself that he thought I needed to hear, which is not, most people aren't usually that open, but he was. And I tried to respond to those things in a biblical way. And he told me later that he was very encouraged because when he spoke about himself and some things that he knew were, you know, sinful about himself, he said some people completely rejected him because of that. And other people who just had told him, it doesn't really matter. And he said, my response was that, well, I continued to show respect him and show him love, but speak to him about where the Bible told him he needed to change. And so from that conversation, he was much more interested in studying, and we did that. You know, and this guy, he had a lot of obstacles and a lot of hurdles to overcome. And one of his biggest hurdles is he didn't want to become a Christian and then fall away. And so we read Romans 8 together, and he went home, and then that night he called me and says, I need to be baptized. And so he was baptized, and he is a dear, dear friend of mine. I love this guy, and he's crazy. The biggest thing that I do is individual classes. I only preach once a month. Sounds kind of crazy for a preacher to only preach once a month. And obviously preaching is important. And when I preach that once a month, I put a lot of work and time into that lesson. Because actually preaching bilingual, when you're going to be translated, you actually need to be more prepared to speak clearly and more succinctly. So it's more prep time to speak, to preach there than other places, which has been nice preaching in English here, by the way. That's been cool. But sermons are not what change people. Sermons help people who want to be helped. You know, sermons are good for people who are really here and really faithful and really wanting to be motivated and changed. But people are more changed by private study and private conversation. And so the majority of what I'm trying to do is just have individual classes with different people throughout the week. And really just help them know Scripture better and understand what they need to do. And that's the majority of what I spend my time doing. Man, technology is cool in that way. I've been able to do a lot of classes in FaceTime and a lot of classes on Skype. That's helped me keep in touch with some kids from camps. There have been some kids in my cabins that have spoken to me, and they need some serious help with some things. And I've been able to keep in touch with them and be useful there, which is great. But even in the city, you know, it could be an hour and a half sometimes for someone in Brooklyn, you know, to come to Manhattan or vice versa. And so we'll just study over Skype, you know. In person would be ideal, But if someone wants to learn the Bible, studying with Skype, studying over Skype is not a problem at all. So I've been able to do lots of classes that way, for which I'm very thankful. Let's wrap up pretty quickly. I just want to share some stories about some people with you. This is Bill, who I told you about. This is his first year at camp, and he was a punk. Not the nicest guy in the world, but he was cool. And over on the right is a picture pretty soon after he had gotten married. Again, I said he's some, you know, ghetto kid from Harlem and, you know, never really gone to church before ever. But because camp, he, you know, got kind of interested. He studied on and off with me the following year. He went back to camp and just decided he needed to get baptized. That fall, he had a big decision to make. He just became a Christian. He was going to be a sophomore, I believe. And he decided that he needed to quit the baseball team. He knew that if he was on the baseball team and around those people, that he wasn't going to stay a strong Christian. He was going to ultimately just quit being a Christian. So he just decided, well, I'm not going to play baseball then. Which is a big deal because he was a very, very excellent. He's Dominican, so he's a very, very excellent baseball player. And he made that sacrifice to put the Lord first, which is an exceptionally mature thing for a sophomore-aged Christian who's only been a Christian for maybe 2 months, right? Well, that's what he did. And he began studying and learning and transforming. He's also a very, very excellent mathematician. Is that what you call that? He's brilliant. He's, like, frustratingly smart. Scholarships and opportunities. I mean, he could really be, like, a big thing that I wouldn't even know what it is because it's math. But he could be important and doing cool stuff and, you know. But he decided to turn some of those things down because he began being more involved in working in the church and teaching in the church and visiting people who needed help. And decided he wanted to become a preacher instead. So he, after doing that for a year in New York, he went down to Atlanta, at Embry Hills, so he could be around a real church, you know, be around elders and mature and old Christians and families, things that he'd never really seen in New York. And he met his wife, and he got married, and he's just a good guy, you know, and that's a very, very successful story. This is Kelvin. That's him on the left there. And he's just my buddy. I don't know. I talked to you about that desperate friend. He was my desperate friend when he was about 11 and 12. He was annoying as all get out, but I liked him a lot, and we had a lot of fun together. He just got engaged, actually. He graduated FC, and he just got engaged, last month. And same thing, he goes from being this annoying 11-year-old kid to 5 years later, 16, 17 years old, and he's one of the guys that I'm depending on, someone that I'm speaking to and sharing struggles and challenges, and he's helping me with those things. So this is very, very encouraging. This is Carlos. That's me and Carlos. That's us in Boston at some museum. Same thing. He's a kid from the Bronx. From Washington Heights, and he is. I went to FC, came back, he's been worshiping with us. He works at Old Navy, and he's been able to move up and progress in Old Navy. He does like marketing, not marketing. He like helps like design like the floors and the setups and things like that. I don't know. So he's moving up ahead in Old Navy. He works really hard there. He works a lot of overnights and stuff. But he is so active in the church. You know, we have a lot of excuses and reasons why we can't be at services or we can't be at gospel meetings and stuff like that. And there's reasons why we can't be at everything. But I tell you what, man, this guy is nearly at everything. He's working 40 to 50 hours a week at Old Navy, and he is at every service and every gospel meeting with very few exceptions. I mean, he's an example of a real hard worker in the church. And other people have jobs, and we can point to Carlos as an example. Well, to Carlos, the work of the church matters, so he makes it happen. He's one of our best translators as well, so a really, really, really cool guy. This is Aida del Villar, and she is my abuelita. She's my grandma. She lives just down the block from me. I've known her since I started going to Sherman Avenue, the Spanish church, and she's been with us when we started the bilingual church. I'm currently visiting her. She lives down the block, so I go to her house 3 to 4 times a week and just do my notes there. She has a home attendant who takes care of her, and so she's always getting the home attendant to cook for me. So I'm getting lots of white rice at her house. She means the world to me. My grandma passed away about 5 years ago on my mom's side. She just is. I mean, I love her as much as I even love my own grandma. She means a lot to me. She does not have a lot of family supporting her, helping her. And so I have responsibilities there to help out with certain chores or certain errands, stuff like that. And one lesson I learned from Ida is, you know, as Christians, we don't get to choose our community. You know, it's a big idea. We gotta find people and friends like us, people our age, people with the same interests, and that's people that I can really relate to. Well, as Christians, we don't get to choose who our people are. If someone is a member of my church, that's my person, that's my people. And they might be different race, they might be a different gender, they might be a different age, but that doesn't really matter because this is somebody that you need to be close to. And I've found lots of comfort and encouragement in my relationship with Ida. And before, when I thought I could only be friends with people my age and people I could have fun with, and I would dismiss different people, dismiss older people, and I've realized we're only shooting ourselves in the foot when we do that. Because when we decide to have a community and have fellowship with our brethren, because they're our brethren, regardless of age or language or anything like that, when we invest in that, I mean, we get much more closer to those people than people that we just share football or baseball or hobbies or what have you. So she's someone who's very, very, very dear to me up there. I've talked 50 minutes. I think my previous 3 sermons have been kind of brief, so maybe that makes up for the fact I've taken up too much time tonight. There's just so much more to say. I know some of that was jumbled and maybe didn't make all that much sense. The point is this, though. God's word needs to be preached everywhere. And in an area where we might not want to be, or an area we might think has got no hope, there's just no such thing. We need to go anywhere. We need to go everywhere. And the places where it seemed like they would be the least likely to be productive and fruitful are the places where they are the most fruitful. You know, I never have a hard time finding people to study the Bible with. You know, there's always an abundance of people. And the greatest reward and the greatest joy that we have as people on this earth is investing back into God's kingdom. Because the greatest things we can accomplish and receive in this life are things related to the kingdom. When you see someone overcome impossible odds because of their faith in Jesus Christ, there's nothing any more valuable than that. When you know that you've been able to help somebody, or you've been helped by somebody because you share Jesus Christ in common, there's not really anything that is more valuable than that. And so you guys, amongst other churches and other brethren, have made it possible for me to have spent so much time there and have to do so much work there. And there's a long list of people who God has been able to use me to be of assistance to. And that's made possible because of people in different parts of the country caring about Christians and caring about people that they've never, ever met before. And so we're just grateful for you guys' interest in the work up there. I'm very personally thankful for your investment in me, and not just financially, but your investment to want to spend time with me and get to know me better, so you can trust me more, hopefully, and know what's going on up there. So lots to be encouraged by. And that's the point. I mean, where are... treasure is, there our heart will be also. Let's put our treasure in God's kingdom. Let's give our heart to God's things, to God's people, to God's word, and really find our purpose in that, and in that alone. And that is only going to benefit us more. Encourage all the members here to do that. If anyone here is not a Christian, we beg you to invest your life into the gospel, to give yourself to the gospel, and be able to be a part of this wonderful community and this purpose that is much, much bigger than you. So if we can help you with that, we encourage you to come forward as we stand together and sing.